You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.
Well, I'm happy to be here with y'all today. I don't know if you're like me, your heads are ready to explode, right? These conferences are always wonderful. There's always so much information, though. And after a certain point, you're sort of saturated, and you think, I just can't hear anymore. So hopefully I won't just, you know, bypass the saturation point, and maybe I can leave you with some good truths about the blessings of step-parent adoption. That is the title of the session. It's the blessings and challenges of step-parent adoption. And I was actually excited when I got picked to present this topic at this year's conference because I have some personal authority in this area. My older two sons are children who experienced the reality of divorce and visitation and abandonment and eventual step-parent adoption. So just for a little history, in my seventh year of marriage, my then husband came home and told me that he was divorcing me. And my kids were little, they were only 4 and 2 at the time. And divorce is always difficult, even when the marriage wasn't great or when there's abuse or whatever the situation is. A divorce is just difficult. And it's hard on the kids especially because they don't understand why that one parent has gone away. And while it wasn't originally in my plans, I did remarry. My husband Larry is a wonderful man who had never had kids. He'd never been married before. And he worked very hard to win me over to marry him, despite all of the obstacles I put in his way. And that's a pretty humorous story. So when we tell it, people are always rather amused at some of the ways that I tried to get him to stop coming around. But regarding the adoption and step-parenting, without going into all the miserable details of the whole divorce situation, my ex-husband didn't see the kids very often at all. And when he did, I learned years later that the visits my kids had with him were not very pleasant. Now, after I remarried, my kids did not like having two dads. They also didn't like having a different last name than mine. And they would often ask, well, can't Larry just adopt us? And we told the boys that there was virtually no way that was ever going to happen, although it certainly was something that we prayed for. And this is where those two important words come into play, but God. But God. In our situation, my ex-husband did not maintain a relationship with our boys by his choice. And for financial reasons, he eventually chose to terminate his parental rights and offer for my new husband to adopt them. Now, statistically speaking, step-parents generally consider adoption after a long absence from the non-custodial parent, and this was our situation. My ex-husband had moved away, and he rarely ever saw the kids. And step-parent adoption for us was an incredible blessing as a family, and our boys benefited greatly. Now, of course, each situation is different, and it doesn't have to be the husband that wants a divorce or runs away. You know, obviously women do the same thing too, but regardless of which parent does it, it always leaves heartache and devastation in the wake. So I think we need to look at who are these single parents that want to get married. I think it's helpful to know some of the statistics. Did you know that 40% of all children now are born out of wedlock? 40%. Often the mom and the dad were never married, but they have a child together from a relationship of any duration. And the majority of kids that are born out of wedlock today are entering into functional, non-marital stepfamilies, which is another mind-blowing statistic. And another thing that I found shocking is that Americans marry, they divorce, they remarry, and they cohabit more than in any other Western society. They also start and stop relationships more quickly than any other society. So what this means for our kids is that by the age of 15, almost 30% of our kids are experiencing two or more mother partnerships. Either the mother has got two or more boyfriends that she's living with, or two or more marriages. This is clearly very difficult on our kids, and I think we can see the results of that kind of lifestyle in our culture. Now, at some point, that woman, if she was not a Christian when she got pregnant, or if she wasn't a Christian when she got married and divorced, or perhaps she was a believer in both of those situations, she may very well wind up in a biblical counseling relationship with you. And if one day she decides she wants to marry a man who is not the child's father, you might find yourself in a premarital, or better yet, a pre-engagement counseling situation with her. If she's already married a man who is not her child's father and the man wants to adopt her kids, you might find yourself in a situation where you are co-counseling the couple with a male counselor. Now, the reasons for single parenthood vary, but the reality is that every child has two biological parents, and the relationship between the parents is often the cause of immense heartache for the children. Too often, one or both parents, both adults, have animosity, or they're difficult to deal with regarding their kids. In our Christian circles, it is more the norm that single parenthood is created when there has been a divorce or when one parent dies. The reason that a biological parent is not in the picture also varies. Sometimes a parent just chooses not to be a part of their child's life in any other way than providing financial support. And unfortunately, there are cases where there's not even financial support for the kids. Sometimes the mother doesn't list the child's father or doesn't even know who he is. The other parent may have died or is incapable of participating in the child's life due to illness. Or perhaps they're involved in drugs or alcohol and they're not capable of taking care of the child, so their rights are terminated by the government. Sometimes a parent might even be incarcerated, and the non-incarcerated parent chooses to divorce them because they're going to be in prison for life, or they seek to have their rights terminated if it's the child's father and they're not married. And sometimes, as in my case, the other parent voluntarily terminates their own parental rights. We can't really talk about step-parent adoption without talking about getting married with children. Now, many single parents want to marry, and a lot of them do, and they do so for a variety of reasons. Marriage or remarriage, for example, can lead to a much fuller life for the adult. You know, all adults want a life for themselves, right? And when you're a single parent, you're often lonely, right? It's a lonely life. Many single moms will tell me they crave adult conversation. Many married moms tell me they crave an adult conversation, right? They want somebody to share their daily experiences with. And anybody that has been in a room with a three-year-old for a day, or, you know, you have no adult interaction, by the time you expect relief, you are welcoming somebody else to come home, right? You're tired of doing nothing but gibberish talk and nursery rhymes and so on. You know, we all crave that adult conversation, but I think more importantly, everybody wants to fall in love and live happily ever after, right? It's overwhelming to be a single parent, and single parents want what they see other people having or what they believe other people are having. They're looking for somebody to share life with, to share responsibilities with them, and to help them to bear the burdens, because single parents are handling all of the burdens of life. They're being mom and dad. They're usually somebody's employee. They are the chief cook. They're the cleaning crew. They are the financier, and they are everything else that goes along with parenthood and adulting, as we say these days. And single parents are looking for somebody who will help them raising the child or the children, and they want somebody who's going to love their child and nurture them as their own. But unfortunately, not everybody marries with children and has the best of motives. There are some people who marry simply because they want to be free from the heavy demands of parenting. They're looking more for a parent for the kids, or someone to help with the financial things in life, rather than they are really looking for a spouse. You know, in the old days, a man would advertise for a woman in the newspaper, right? Especially with the whole westward expansion. When we moved to Kansas City, Missouri, one of the things that we spent a lot of time doing was examining the history of Kansas City. And because that was like the last of civilization and the beginning of the great frontier, men would go out all the way to Kansas from Missouri, and they would start advertising back in the home newspapers for a wife. They would call her a mail order bride, right? And her purpose was to come out and raise his children if his wife had died during the wagon train west or whatever. He had a ranch to run and cattle to take care of and so on, and he couldn't be bothered to raise the children. Besides, that was woman's work back then, right? So he would advertise for a wife who would raise the children while he worked the farm or the ranch. And single moms today will sometimes marry just because they want to find a man who will help provide for the family and to relieve her of the burden of trying to make ends meet every month. Now, there's also, you know, something called getting married or remarried with children. And considering remarriage with kids can be a real blessing, but it comes with huge responsibilities. We know that being married or remarrying isn't new. And if you look at how people interact with one another, one of the things you notice is we tend to need relationships at our core, right? We just spent 2 years being locked up. And what was the first thing that people said? I miss people. I miss interacting with people. I want my people. And last year when we came to the ACBC conference, even though we were all wearing masks all over our faces, we were all so happy to see one another because it was interaction, it was communication. So we are created to be relational beings. And we all long to be a part of something. Typically, we all want to be part of a family. And whether our family is biological or it's adopted, God means for us to interact with one another in a family form. And God makes it known by that adoption and family in any form is central to what he desires, right? He adopted all of us who are Christians to be a part of his family. Psalm 68 is where God says that he is a father to the fatherless, he is a defender of widows, and that verse further on says, God sets the lonely in a home. Another version of that verse said, God sets the lonely in families. So families are important. Approximately one-third of all weddings in America today are forming step families. In 2001, 38% of all marriages in our country were remarriages for one person or both parties. And in 2014, 40% of all married couples with children were step couples, which meant that at least one partner had a child from a previous relationship before marriage. And now 15% of all first marriages are creating step families. So a divorced mom with kids marries a divorced dad with kids, or a widow or a widower marries someone with kids, or someone with kids marries someone that never had kids before, right? If they only all looked like the Brady Bunch, right? I don't know, some of you are probably too young to even know who the Brady Bunch is. But, you know, they were a blended family where she had three kids and he had three kids. Both of their spouses died. They found each other, fell in love, and they created this family called the Brady Bunch. And blended families are unique in many ways, and frankly, most of them bear no resemblance to the Brady Bunch at all. Okay, that was a made-for-TV thing. But one of the things that happened in the Brady Bunch was that it took time for all of these people to gel. It took time for them to become a family. And in reality, it takes an average of 2 to 3 years before a new union operates like a family or feels like one. And a blended family can be a great family, but it does take a lot of work, and it takes a lot of dedication and grace and understanding. And to create a happy, successful blended family, the couple has to remember some really important things. They have to remember patience, flexibility, and adjustments are going to be needed. And if either person is not patient or flexible and they struggle with change, it's wise to reconsider the potential for marriage. Even when those kids are little bitty things, depending on the previous life situation of the individuals, there are often huge adjustments for everyone. If the kids are too young to really even notice or care, it might not be that hard. But really, once those little people are a year or 2 years old or older, it does start to get complicated. My kids were little when Larry was introduced into the picture. And the older boy was not happy about this. And my little guy, he was just thrilled to have a guy around to play with him. And it took a while for my older son to graft to him. And partly, he tells me now, is because he didn't trust anybody at that point in his life. And he was just a little guy. But when I asked him, well, what was it that made you decide that this was okay? And he said it was consistency. Larry was consistent. He said he was never overbearing and he was never forceful with them to accept him. And that bred trust, which led to them respecting him. Now, if you are considering marriage or remarriage with children and forming a step family, counseling is very, very important. Pre-engagement counseling is frankly critical. It's vital when the kids are involved that before any plan for marriage is made, that pre-engagement counseling should be done for the sake of the kids and even for the sake of the adults, honestly. The couple should enter into a pre-engagement relationship, pre-engagement counseling relationship with a man and a woman in their church or in a biblical counseling ministry to determine if marriage is even a good idea at all. We get many families, blended families, in our office, and they wish they would have received that counsel and taken the time to get pre-engagement counseling and then premarital counseling. It's just wise for them to meet with someone and address some of the common issues and problems that I'm going to talk about in just a minute. And it gives the counselors an opportunity to ask some really vital questions. And of course, you're not going to be able to address every potential problem or situation, but you will certainly be able to see the glaring ones. So the very first thing that should happen is that each person should submit to a background check. Now, how's that for romantic, right? It's not the most romantic thing to do, but I have seen disasters narrowly averted because the couple went through a background check. I've also seen the heartache and the devastation that occurs when the person learns something about their spouse after the fact. So background checks, especially in this day and age, and especially if you find a potential spouse online, because ChristianMingle.com and all of these other websites for Christian dating, most of them are filled with the kind of people that you don't want to marry, right? So you really want to get the background check done. The kids, in our opinion, shouldn't be introduced into the counseling process until the couple and the counselors believe that marriage is a good idea. You don't want to expose the kids to a series of men or women, right? It creates incredible instability for the kids. So you want to make sure that this is going to be a good situation for the two of you before you start bringing the kids into it. So let's take a look at some of the things that need to be explored in a pre-engagement counseling situation for step-parenting to be successful. So the counseling process could look like something like this. Right? You want to discuss some of the adjustments in pre-engagement counseling. And a lot of these are just practical things. The number one consideration is, are both people Christians? If not, well, then evangelism must be the first priority. Because if it's an unequally yoked situation, this, of course, opens up a whole different conversation. And you'll want to be aware of the false profession of faith, of course, right? And then counsel the couple to take some time for discipleship for that new believer apart from the pre-engagement counseling. And this will reveal, hopefully, anyway, if the profession of faith is real. And it will give time for the new convert to grow in his or her faith. It will definitely slow things down, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. You're also going to want to address or learn if the single parent has what I call the Lone Ranger mentality. Okay, this happens when he or she is used to counseling, or excuse me, he or she is used to parenting alone, and they're used to making decisions by themselves for their child, independent of anybody else's wisdom or counsel. Bringing in another person into your life and allowing them to provide parenting input can sometimes be sticky. So you'll need to ask good questions to learn, for example, if the woman has been the Lone Ranger, if she might have a tendency to want to undermine her new husband's authority with the kids and in the home. Does she perhaps have a prideful, I know what's best attitude, particularly if her husband or the man she wants to marry has never parented kids before? If it's the man who has the kids and he's seeking to remarry, does he have the expectation of the new wife to just simply replace the old one and assume similar role to the one that she held in his life and in the home? Now, this might be more common if maybe his wife has died, but you do want to clarify those expectations. The potential wife needs to know what assisting him looks like in raising the children. What does sharing the parenting responsibility look like to him? Does it look like the new wife completely coming in and taking over and the husband just becoming the passenger? Or is the parent that has the kids, are they so particular about everything that the potential spouse can't seem to do anything right? Or is he or she constantly compared to the other birth parent in both good ways and bad ways? Now, I know several women that have married men that have children. And a woman that marries a man with children understands that kids are a part of the deal. But it's very important in the pre-engagement process to clarify expectations, or the new spouse might find out there was much more to all this than they expected. For example, a woman who marries a man with kids thinking they're going to have much more time as a couple and much more time for romance and fun than is reality is going to be upset. And if she is, for example, unprepared for spending the whole summer with his kids, or being thrust into a form of motherhood without having any idea what she's doing, it can be disastrous for everybody involved. And the man might have the expectation that what it means to be a dad is just bringing home a paycheck and mowing the lawn. He might have little to no interest in learning how to parent. So you'd want to set up some role plays with your counselees. You want to set up various situations and you want to learn how each person is going to respond. Another thing that's going to be really important is the couple would have to decide on how they're going to define their family. They have to agree on what roles each person is going to play. For example, will the kids be known as stepchildren? Will they be my husband's kids or my wife's children? The children from his or her other relationship or prior life? Or will they consider them children by choice, calling them my kids, my boys, my girls, our kids? What are the kids going to call the new parent? Will they have a term of endearment like Daddy John or Mama Sue or Papa or, you know, Dad or Mom or first name basis? See, this terminology will be critical because the terminology sets up how the family is viewed from within and from the outside. When we got to the engagement stage, we asked the boys what they wanted to call Larry, and we told them whatever you want to call him was fine. At some point, I recall, we gave them some options because they kind of probably looked at us like, what are you talking about? Because they were little, okay? We gave them options that included just calling him Larry. And they started out with Pa, because my ex-husband would not allow them to call him Dad. Now, after we were married, they went from calling him Pa to calling him Daddy Larry. And then one day, this was before the adoption, when they came home from an infrequent visit with my ex-husband, they both walked in the door and started calling Larry Daddy. We looked at each other and went, wonder what happened here. But it stuck. And they called him Daddy from that day onward of their own accord. And in our family, we didn't use step-parent and we didn't use step-child. We have one biological child together, Larry and I do, and so when our middle child came home from someplace once, he came up to me and asked, Mom, is Jake my half-brother? Is Dad my stepdad? Now, he was only about 6 or 7 at the time, and he looked super distressed over this thing. So I answered him, and I said, well, we don't use those terms in our house. Dad is your dad, I'm your mom, and Jake is your little brother. We are a family. And the look on his face was utter relief. See, he had only ever thought of Jake as his brother, and Larry was the only dad he would actually ever knew. So he didn't have a category for step anything. My kids fully accepted Larry as their dad. And like I said, he's really the only dad they've ever known. So much so that at one point in time when my kids were adults, the kids were adults, my ex-husband wanted to form a relationship with them and they declined. They said, no thanks, we already have a dad and it's not you. Other issues to creating a successful blended family that should be covered in pre-engagement counseling are things like, how is discipline going to be handled? Does the couple understand biblical discipline? That discipline and discipleship, or discipline is discipleship, it's not punishment. Is a potential spouse willing to put in the time and effort to disciple the kids? Is there an agreement on how discipline is going to be carried out? Does one person, for example, believe in spanking, and the other person, are they completely opposed to it? Will timeouts be the only form of approved discipline in the home? See, there must be agreement on these issues up front, because once you're married, it's too late, right? The child will sense the division between the parents, and because they're just little sinners, they're going to capitalize on it, right? Is the birth parent comfortable with having someone else disciplining and discipling their child? Another crucial issue is the authority structure in the home and over the kids. Will there be shared and equal authority over the kids? Meaning, is the birth parent willing to give the new spouse some authority over the kids? If the woman is the birth parent, is she going to be willing to submit to her new husband's authority in the home over the kids? Will she teach the kids to accept the biblical view of authority? If the husband is the birth parent, will he be willing to teach the kids to obey and respect his new wife? And before the parents, before the couple can teach these things to the kids, they have to have a biblical understanding of these things and they have to be in agreement with them. So depending on their own spiritual maturity, the counselors might have to spend time on basic biblical discipleship. So these are just a few of the issues that need to be addressed with a couple in a pre-engagement setting. And assuming that all goes well and the couple does then plan to marry, it's wise for the parents that are going to be forming a blended family to anticipate challenging questions and difficult scenarios as children come to terms with what will be the new living arrangement. So there are typically some common issues for each person, the mom or the stepmom. So for the woman whose husband is adopting her child, having the new parent or husband is going to require her to surrender much of the emotional control she's had over the kids. If they are our kids, then we have the co-responsibility for them. We now have a responsibility to teach, rebuke, correct, and train in righteousness, right? This is going to be a challenge for the woman who up to this point has been that lone ranger. She's been used to single parenting and making decisions independent of anybody else's wisdom or counsel. And it's going to require her to humble herself before God and sometimes before her children. And she's going to have to be open to new ways of doing things and be agreeable to different ideas than the ones that she had before. She's going to have to support her husband's style of discipline and his decisions as the husband and the father in the home. She may have to agree with him and present a unified front even when she thinks her way is the right way. She will have to encourage and require the kids to respect her husband as an authority in their lives. So the couple will need to bond together and they will need to show solidarity to the kids. And part of what has to happen is the wife has to be careful not to shut out her new husband in favor of her children. For example, you know, if the kids are a little older, maybe they have like inside jokes with each other that the new husband isn't going to be aware of. You don't want to do that. You don't want to do things that are going to cause this division, right? Well, this is us over here and now you're the new guy coming in, right? You want to avoid these inside jokes and you want to avoid put-downs that are going to cause the kid to disregard their new stepfather altogether. It's a fine line between these kinds of things and even like handling the discipline and devaluing the husband's position in the home. The kids should be required to show the same respect for their stepfather that they would any teacher, law enforcement officer, or anyone else in authority. And if the ex-husband or the children's father has been an active influence, the couple will also have to continue to encourage, in most cases, the relationship, keep that going with the biological father, because the kids will still need and want a relationship with their biological dad. Now, the same thing goes when it's the dad or the stepdad, right? These are basic counseling issues, and I'm not going to go into too much detail on them. But if the man has the child and the woman he wants to marry has no children, or if she's bringing her own children into the marriage, he's going to have to allow her time to adjust to her new role too. And if he is wise, he will be sure that it is explained and agreed to before the marriage takes place. His expectations of her and her willingness to fulfill them must be out in the open before the marriage, or there's going to be big division. She must be willing and agree to place herself under his authority in the home and be in agreement with how he wants the kids to be raised. Of course, he must support her parenting decisions too. He's going to have to give her the freedom to learn the kids and to develop her own style of parenting with them. And when she's overwhelmed, he has to take that seriously and he has to do what he can do to give her the help that she needs. And if this man is wise, he will continue to take the time to date his wife after the marriage. And while this is important in every marriage, in a marriage with children and stepchildren, this is really vital. Because he has to be her loving husband in addition to a dad or a stepdad. And he has to continue to cultivate that relationship with his wife and spend good quality couple time together to nurture that relationship. And his kids must understand that his wife is the authority and that she is carrying out his wishes in his absence. So he must teach, rebuke, correct, and train his children, especially if they are disobedient and disrespectful to his wife. Another problem that he may also have to be involved with is if his ex-wife or the mother of his children, the biological mother of the children, are still involved. Because some women are just absolutely vicious to the new mom, the new woman in their kid's life, particularly, you know, if there was an ugly divorce or whatever, right? These women can just be vicious, and he's got to do what he can to protect her. And the new wife should be willing to work with the mother of the children, if possible, and to the degree that it's possible. Respecting one another's territory and wishes about the kids is best, right? It's the best possible scenario, and that's really what you should encourage your counselees to go for. Now, I'm not suggesting compromising biblical principles, right? But everybody will benefit from a mutually agreeable relationship, right? The kids will benefit and the parents will benefit. All right, now we can talk about step-parent adoption after all of that groundwork. When a couple gets married, and when children have an absent biological parent, adoption becomes a serious topic for discussion in many families. Adoption, legal adoption, makes an emotional child to a legal commitment to a child, and it provides stability to the child when his or her biological parent does not provide it. Before you ever talk to the child about adopting them, the parent needs to be certain about that decision. And once a parent knows with certainty that they want to adopt, they can talk to their spouse first and eventually the child. But it is critical that you involve the child if he or she is old enough in this decision. Surprising the child with an adoption might not be the best approach for anybody. Right? Discuss the possibility of adopting over the course of several conversations with the child. Right? Don't leave the kid out of the decision. And when you have the talks about it, you want to give the child time to think about what this possibility would mean. Children who are old enough to share opinions and have a preference ought to have input. They ought to have input. It's so important that the parents are compassionate toward the child in this process, because there is often a lot of emotion involved in this decision for the child. So it's incumbent upon the parents that they listen with empathy and demonstrate grace and mercy toward the child. Right? The child is experiencing a lot in this process. There are a lot of different ramifications of adoption. You want to discuss the good things that would come out of a step-parent adoption. And you definitely want to bring up the negative things, such as severing the ties with the biological parent. In some cases, this might be an easy decision, right? But others are more complex if the child's emotions are all involved. And knowing what to expect will help you prepare for the conversation. So here are some, but not all, of the common problems after a step-parent adoption. Understand that the adoption may be explained as both a joy and a loss for children. It may also be experienced as both a joy and a loss for the children. Children often grieve the loss of their non-custodial parent. The fact that their non-custodial parent doesn't want to be in their life can confuse them and upset them. They process it as rejection. Why doesn't my parent want me? Right? Even though they may be excited about the possibility of a new daddy or a new mommy, right? We all want that connection to our biological parent, no matter how awful of a human being they might be. So the parents need to be prepared for the why questions, like, why did my mom or dad give me up? Why didn't they want me anymore? Why can't I see my parents or my cousins or my grandparents anymore from the other family? And these questions can be heartbreaking for a step-parent, but you can't avoid them and you shouldn't avoid them. And after the adoption is complete, there might be a tendency to think, well, we went over all of this before the adoption. Why are we going through all this now? I thought all this was settled. I thought all these questions were answered. But the step-parent who is adopted has to be prepared for these questions to surface again, because we're dealing with children. Okay, we're not dealing with adults. Adults have a hard enough time processing this. Okay, little kids have a hard time. All right? The kids might not really have understood the loss of the extended family of their other biological parent if that happens. And just because the non-custodial parent doesn't want to be a part of that child's life anymore doesn't mean you have to cut out the whole biological family if there's not a reason to. You know, while it's common for the birth parent to relinquish all parental rights and responsibilities during the step-parent adoption process, they might agree to the step-parent adoption with some level of visitation built in for either themselves or the biological grandparents. So if it's appropriate, you could consider allowing video visits between them and their grandparents and their aunts and uncles and cousins. Don't sever meaningful relationships following the adoption unless those relationships are harmful to the child. All right? Anytime there is an adoption, the child experiences a loss of identity to begin with. And the child may really struggle with this. Depending on the age of the child, they might need some understanding, or they might need some help understanding who they are. And I'll talk more about that in just a minute. So one of the primary things that we as biblical counselors do is we give hope, right? So you want to pray. You want to encourage your counselees to pray for their new family, to pray for their children, and involve the children in prayer as they're forming this new family unit. Help them to understand that adoption is the beginning of another relationship for them, additional relationships for them. And it's critical that the child be aware that they won't ever have their original family unit again. But the Lord has allowed them to have more people to love, more people to support them, more people to care for them in the family. And as the parents, you want to help the parents understand that while they are really happy, right? The new husband and the new wife, they are super happy. They're over the moon. They've got a new life ahead of them. And while the child might have been totally in favor of the adoption when it happened, that child still may experience it as a loss on some level. So the parents need to give the kids an opportunity to talk through their stories and to work through the feelings of loss biblically. Right? The parents need to be open to the children talking about their biological parent and answering questions about him or her. If possible, keep those lines of communication open with the child in an effort to remain positive yet honest about what it was that led to the step-parent adoption. Now, older kids may ask about the problematic qualities of their biological parent, the reason that there needed to be a severing of parental rights or a termination by the government, and you can be honest about those things. But you also want them to share positive aspects of who their biological parent is whenever possible. Because remember, that child is still partially genetically somebody else, right? They're not all the custodial parent. And you don't want to paint that other person as a completely awful, despicable human being, because that's still part of who they are. So you want to talk about the positive aspects. There's always something nice you can say about everybody, right? In most cases. So you're going to want to address the losses, the real losses that the child is experiencing biblically. Don't deny what the child is experiencing and frame it for them in a biblical context. Show them passages of scripture, for example, like Hebrews 4, 14 through 16. Help the child to realize that Jesus understands their sorrow. Jesus understands this trial. You could remind him Jesus was also part of a blended family, right? Use the book of Ruth, perhaps, for a little girl, particularly the story of Ruth and Boaz, to show the children how God can use loss to bring about his will. Or maybe the story of Esther and the relationship between Esther and Mordecai. Mordecai stepped into Esther's life and took her as his own daughter when her mother and her father died. So there are definitely biblical examples that you can use. A child who's having a hard time with a loss of identity should be taught about what their identity could be in Christ, who they are as someone created in the image and likeness of God if they're not yet at the point of salvation. But those who have made a profession of Christ should be taught about who they are as a Christ follower and what their place is in the family as an adopted son or daughter. The issue of identity among adopted children is one of the most vital. So you don't want to minimize teaching on this subject at all. You want to do a lot of study. There's a really good book out there. I think it's just called ID, Who Am I in Christ? It's written by a biblical counselor, and you'll know the book because it has a really shiny cover, like blinds you when the light hits it. But it's supposed to represent a mirror, okay? So I would recommend, I can't think of the author's name right now, but this book, ID, is really helpful. It goes through all of the theological understandings of identity. And even if the child isn't old enough to understand all of the theological terminology, the parents can read it and then help the child, you know, bring it down to their own language. This, by the way, identity can be a great opening to the gospel, because the parents have a real-life illustration of adoption, right? And they should absolutely use it to help the child understand what being adopted by God through salvation is. The goal is to help the child find identity in God, in Christ, and to understand and believe that what God says about them is what is most important, not what they think about themselves or what others think of them. You want to teach the child about the great heroes of the faith that struggled with their identity too, right? Talk about Moses, talk about Peter, talk about Paul, all men who made great impacts for the kingdom of God. They all had hard times, and all three of those guys struggled with their identity. Now, you're going to have to deal with some heart issues with the kids. Right? In our ministry, we say that heart change is required for life change. That's, you know, we don't believe in just counseling the outer man. We don't believe counseling starts with the outer man. As biblical counselors, we know that the inner man is where the hard work is done. And so it's vital when you're dealing with children who have been adopted and they're showing you by their behavior that there are issues of the heart, that you address them biblically, not psychologically. It's also important to keep in mind that the child is both material and immaterial, and what the child is thinking, believing, and desiring in their heart will determine how they feel and how they react. Proverbs 20, verse 5 informs the parents that they have the responsibility to draw out the heart of their child. So as the child is demonstrating various actions and emotions, like guilt, for an example, seeking to disciple the child on the heart level is what is going to yield the most fruit. So you're going to want to teach the parents how to help their child in this situation deal with guilt. Right? You want to teach the parents that children are fiercely loyal. And when a child begins to develop a relationship, an emotional one, and a connection with their new step-parent and any of his or her other children, they're going to experience a loyalty conflict because they're going to come to love these people. They're going to want to love these people in their life. But the struggle is going to be, well, I want to be a part of this new family, but I don't want to hurt Daddy. I don't want to hurt Mommy. So you're going to have to talk with them about how there is plenty of love to go around. It doesn't have to be an either-or situation in many cases. They can still love their biological parent, and it's okay for them to grow to love the new people that God has brought into their life too. That enjoying the new relationships is not sinful, and it's not a betrayal of the old relationships, despite how it might feel right now. So the parents need to teach the children how to speak biblical truth to themselves and perhaps memorize various scriptures that the children will relate to, right? And then, if it's appropriate, continue to encourage the relationship with the other parent and the other family. Allow the child to express their thoughts about the new marriage and the new family without reacting to what the child says, because we all know that sometimes kids just say things because they want to provoke a response, right? So you want to listen to them, and then you want to correct them biblically. Another thing that you may have to help the parents to deal with is fear. When a divorce takes place, a child's security base is deeply shaken. And if the other parent is absent because of something like criminality or drugs or alcohol, they're in prison or something, their security system will also be shaken. Things were really traumatic for them, right? Before mom left or dad left. And the child is often fearful that these things are going to repeat themselves, that they're going to happen again. Sadly, in our culture, they are happening cyclically, right? We get a woman that just makes one bad decision after another, and she drags the kids with her through every one of these bad decisions. And it happens for the men too. But every time there's a new relationship and a severing and a new relationship and a severing, right, the child is fearful it's just going to keep happening. Even when it's just once, when there was one bad relationship or one divorce or one, you know, mother or father that didn't stick around, no matter how much you tell a child something, what they experience means far more to them than what they're told. One person who was possibly the center of their universe is gone, my mom or my dad. And now somebody else has taken their place. So it's normal that they will fear more changes. And it's normal that they're afraid to trust, that they're afraid to form new relationships because they are fearful that these new people are going to go away too. Children also fear that they're never going to see their other parent again. And a sad reality is that 1/3 of all children who experience a divorce in the family, 1 out of every 3 of those kids never sees their other parent again. So it is a sad reality. It's also a sad reality that 50 to 60% of remarriages end in a divorce. So the security and safety of these kids has already been shaken, and many don't believe this new or newest daddy or mommy is going to last either. And they may distrust the parent, the new parent, they may distrust their parenting style. So you're going to have to help the parents understand that these kids are fearful and then teach them how to biblically overcome fear. And that's just basic biblical counseling. Same thing with worry. Kids that are in a situation like a step-parent adoption might worry about things that they always consider dependable in life going away. For example, they might be worried about being marginalized in the new family. If the new parent has kids of his or her own, they might worry that their biological parent is going to come to love the new kids more than they love their own. Right? They might worry that somebody's going to take their stuff, or they're going to sleep in their bedroom, or there's going to be different rules to follow than the things that they're always used to. So, I mean, these are common counseling issues. It's just the circumstances are that it's a step-parent adoption or a blended family. These are just a couple of the common problems that we have time to cover in blending families together. Parents who marry parents with children in the home need help, and they need hope if the situation is going to work out at all. And let's just face it, the more people are involved, the more complicated the family dynamics are going to be, and the older the children are, the more complicated it might become. So for a child who is fearful that this new marriage and this new family isn't going to last, the parents need to remind them of the covenant that they made before God. And they may need consistent reminders that parent and step-parent desire to live their life to honor and glorify God in their marriage. And that means they're going to work on it even when it's hard. They're going to need to give the children consistent assurances that they're not going to give up on making it all work. When parents and step-parents, when they will affirm the role of the non-custodial parent in the child's life, that's often very helpful for the child, at least in the beginning, right? They should assure the child, if it's appropriate, that the relationship continue, that they don't have any intention of preventing that relationship. Everybody needs to keep their expectations reasonable in relationships like this. New relationships develop over time. They're not going to develop overnight. And so supporting the new spouse in parenting and supporting the new spouse in discipline so that the kids aren't able to drive a wedge between the spouses is also going to be very, very important. Because we know them little kids, sometimes they can be real stinkers, right? They want to, I mean, even when it's biological mom and biological dad, they still sometimes try to drive a wedge between the two parents because it gets them what they want. More so in step-parent families, even after a step-parent adoption. So you want to help the parents be aware that this is something that could happen and then give them the tools to overcome that. We have got dozens of good books on parenting in that bookstore downstairs, don't we? Lots and lots of solid biblical resources that are written on parenting. And with these tools that you're taking away from this workshop, combined with those already written resources, you can help these parents to develop a solid plan for step-parent adoption and what the family is going to look like. And part of that includes addressing all of these issues that the kids are facing from a biblical perspective. Now, there's a lot more that we could discuss here. There's many more issues that we could cover. In fact, I've really only scratched the surface. But the bottom line of what will make a step family or a blended family successful, the bottom line is when Christ is the center of the family and when the people in the family desire to honor God and glorify Him in their individual lives, there is a great possibility that the family will unite and they will function as one. They will be demonstrating forgiveness and forbearance and unconditional love and grace and mercy to one another. And frankly, all of those things are required. When the spiritual issues of the child are addressed by the parents in a blended family, the child or the children will grow up with a very different view than a situation where the parents just throw the thing together and they determine that, well, it's all just going to work out. It'll all work out somehow. We'll just do the best that we can do, and that will be it. So these relationships take a lot of planning. They take a lot of foresight. They take a lot of work. You know, you cannot just throw a blended family together like, you know, mashed potatoes and butter and expect it all to work out okay. Right? And the more effort that's put in on the front end when the pre-engagement counseling process is taking place, the better it's going to be for the whole family. Okay? So I think there's probably time for a couple questions if anybody has questions. Otherwise, yeah, well, I think that, you know, family discipleship is a good thing. And because the parents are ultimately responsible for raising up the children, it really is a good approach to help the parents learn how do I disciple these kids. And then the church can come in and be the support of that. The church can provide the resources. The church can provide maybe even, you know, like if depending on the size of the church and how many families there are, they could provide special events for blended families or step-parent families because the dynamics are different. And kids that come from a blended family, sometimes, especially in Christian circles, they really feel like they're the extra digit on the hand. Because all the other kids in their circles, well, my mom and dad aren't divorced. Like, how come you have a different dad? You know, like, what happened there? And the kids are especially sensitive to that. So having kind of a network of families that are like theirs is often very helpful if the church can create something like that, at least for the early years, right? Until the family gels, a couple of years, those 2 to 3 years that it takes for a step family to become really blended, gelled together so that they function well, that's a really good approach to take. But as far as like, where do you actually start? If there are no problems, don't look for any, okay? If there are problems, you're gonna wanna teach the parents, how do we address them biblically? How do we do this? And those are basic biblical counseling issues that we all already know, right, if you're certified.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned some parenting resources, and I was just wondering if you had any recommendations for specifically for blended families, you know, parenting or biblical counseling for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is so complex and the dynamics are so different than a typical parenting.
Yes. So the best thing that I have found so far is there are those little booklets that are put out by, I think CCEF has some, and the Shepherd's Press has some, and they are books that are written specifically for step-parents, blended families, adoptive parents, and I wish there was more, but there really isn't. There really isn't. Yeah, it's definitely an area of need. So if any of you are blended families or step-parents, you know, get out your laptop and start writing. Because we need the resources. We really do.
You mentioned that they need to keep your expectations reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a situation where there's a blended family and there's a lot of extended family that's involved, mm-hmm. What advice would you give? How would the extended family keep their expectations reasonable for the step-parent?
Mm-hmm. I think that as a part of the pre-engagement counseling process, you have to determine how does the extended family view the incoming family member, okay? And this is one of the reasons that the pre-engagement counseling process is so critical in these families. If the family, if the extended family are not believers, they're gonna have a whole different view of this than if they are believers. Right? So is the situation one or the other that you're referring to?
Believers.
They're believers. Right. Well, then if they're believers, you can obviously rely on biblical principles of family and adoption and, you know, the putting together of people groups in ways that bring God honor and glory. Right? The extended family members won't be living in the home every day, right? But it will be helpful if they're not going to be full of animosity toward the new family member. And if they are, then those individual relationships have to be addressed. You might even consider bringing in, you know, like reconciliation group. Ernie Baker does reconciliation counseling. It's a specialty area for him. We have the ACBC specialization on reconciliation, but this is a real focus of ministry for them. Then you get conciliation counseling, where you bring in all the family members that are difficult or troublesome, and you resolve the problem biblically. Okay, someone else had a question. The lady behind you.
Younger the children, when this remarriage takes place, mm-hmm. easier. But if they're older, if they're young teenagers,
oh yeah,
or like 6 to mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. are there any tips or more time?
Well, I think once the couple decides they finish a course of pre-engagement counseling, before they go to premarital counseling, and they introduce the person into their lives. Right, the relationships with each individual child should be taken individually, okay? Because these are all individual people. And so you might have to set up individual counseling sessions, biblical counseling sessions, to work out fears, concerns, and so on. It seems like, unfortunately, there's often one stinker in the midst, and you want to do everything possible before a marriage takes place to work that out. There, one bad apple in a home, if I can put it that way, can really spoil everything. And you want to keep that from happening, if at all possible. We have counseled people to walk away from a potential marriage situation because it would have turned out a disaster, right? Because there was a child that was a teenager that was not on board. So, I mean, and really, the parent's primary responsibility at that time in her life is to raise the children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. That is the parent's primary responsibility. And it may require that the parent set aside their own desire for a spouse until the kids are grown and gone. That's a hard truth. All right, any other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much for coming, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.
You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.